is one of our leading developers of new corneal techniques, new corneal surgery techniques, and it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Marjan Farid.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry for the wait in this afternoon, and it's a pleasure and honor for me to be here and to speak about breakthroughs in corneal surgery because this is my favorite topic. I love this, and since we're such a nice small audience, we can keep it open for questions throughout. So just wave me down and we'll discuss things as we go. First of all, just a quick, I know you all know this, but the cornea of the eye is the frontmost part of the eye. It's the window of the eye. And it is an aspheric, smooth, a refractive surface, accounts for about 60% of the total power, a refractive power of the eye. It's the first refractive element that light hits to focus into the retina, into the back of the eye, which then transfers that image to the brain. So it's important for it to be smooth, with a nice tear film, spherical, and not irregular. So all of these, there's a lot of things that go into focusing that light clearly, and the cornea accounts for most of that. These are some of the early pioneers in corneal transplantation. Corneal transplantation has been was first done as early as I think the teens. Right? Is that a lot of progress has been made since then, and a lot of exciting things. But some of the early challenges these corneal transplant surgeons faced was, well, how do we suture such a small thing to the eye? So surgical technique, that was significantly improved once we developed a surgical microscope, because now we can see tissue that small, and we can work with the area of the body, which is very fine, and this allows us detailed precision in our surgical technique. Sutures. We used to have very large sutures. These patients would have very painful eyes after a corneal transplant because they would stay in the hospital with these thick sutures. Now we have advances of what we call 10-0 or 11-0 sutures, which are so fine. They're finer than the human hair. And sometimes we can't even see them with a naked eye. You really need to use a surgical microscope to see those well. So that has really progressed corneal surgery significantly. Tissue availability and preservation. A lot of patients would have to go home with beepers and wait for a tissue to become available. That's no longer the case. We can, if you're a candidate for corneal transplant surgery, I sign up patients, I say I'll do your surgery next Monday, and the eye banking we have now in the United States is phenomenal. They call me about 2 or 3 days before surgery and they say we have these tissues available and these are the qualities, and I accept if they're good tissues, but eye banking has been a significant advance. And then graft infections and failures with the advent of sterile techniques and pharmaceuticals and fantastic eye drops and antibiotics, this has significantly progressed as well. So we've come a long way already. Yes?
For a transplant, does it always have to be from a woman, for a woman and a man for a man?
No, it doesn't. It's not gender related.
Would you repeat the question?
Yes, the question was, if you're having a transplant, does your cornea have to come from the same gender, a person with the same gender? And no, it doesn't. It doesn't even need to come from a person with the same age. As long as it's a good quality tissue, which we check before surgery, then it's fine. We don't even have to match tissue anymore these days. Yes?
This fine suture material, that pre-threaded for you?
Yes. It's pre-packaged. Everything is done for us nowadays. We just open it up and use it. No, we don't. Current challenges. So some of the challenges we currently face as transplant surgeons. Now patients want to go home right away, which we can do. Patients want vision almost the next day, like a cataract surgery. And this is a little more difficult in the realm of corneal surgery, but we've got our recovery rates and our visual recovery down from months to 1 week, months to years, down to weeks to 1 or 2 months. So we've made advances there. Recovery time and post-sealing. Again, now patients go home the same day. The recovery is a lot faster, especially with some of the techniques I'm going to discuss today. And it's becoming more towards a refractive procedure, patients that want super 20/20 vision right away, and the demands have gone significantly higher for corneal transplant surgeons, but that's what causes advance in technology to grow, so we're excited about some of the technology I'm going to talk to you about today. Did you have a question?
What's the average recovery time?
I'm sorry?
What's the average recovery time?
Recovery time after corneal transplant surgery? It's various depending on the type of corneal transplant surgery, and we'll discuss that. But overall, patients go home, in general, the day of surgery, and the recovery, the initial recovery and the discomfort and light sensitivity usually lasts a few days to a week. And then visual recovery occurs over a period of weeks to a period of a month or two or three. Yes?
Dr. Maskett's here.
Okay.
So if you could you be done in a half an hour?
I'll go through this as I am. All right, so.
Here, we'll be able to speak after Dr. Freed.
So some advances in corneal surgery. Now we have disease-targeted surgery. So whereas prior to, I would say, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, what we would do is if the cornea was diseased, we would replace the entire cornea. Now we can target and only replace the part of the cornea that is the diseased portion. So we have what we call DSEC or DMEC for patients who have endothelial disease. Endothelial layer of the cornea is the inner layer of the cornea. And for those types of diseases, we can replace just that layer, which improves in terms of recovery time, is faster in terms of visual recovery, in terms of postoperative healing is a lot faster because we're not replacing the entire tissue. The wound is smaller and such. I'll talk about the details of these in a minute. We have DALK, or deep anterior lamellar keratoplasty, for patients who have diseases of the front part of the cornea. So we replace everything except the endothelial layer because that's the healthy part. And then we have for patients with severe ocular surface disorders such as chemical burns, thermal burns, various types of things that cause significant damage to the limbal stem cells of the surface of the eye, we have limbal stem cell transplantation and artificial corneal transplantation, and I'll discuss that at the end. There's a lot of advances in this area as well. And one of the big things here that we're very proud of at UC Irvine is the advance of the femtosecond laser technology, which was first discovered and advented here at UC Irvine at the Gavin Herbert Eye Institute, and now it's becoming very popular. It's very popular in LASIK surgery for creation of LASIK flaps, but now we can use this in corneal transplant surgery, and has really advanced our ability to allow patients to recover faster in terms of vision and decreasing the astigmatism, and I'll talk about that. As a matter of fact, I'm going to start with this. So the femtosecond laser is a laser which allows, it uses a process of photodisruption, and it allows precise cuts in the tissue of the cornea at precise depths, down to the tens of microns. So very precise cuts. And instead of making this is a side view of the cornea. Instead of what we would do previously is make a straight cut, creating a butt joint, which is, if anybody knows carpentry, they know that's the weakest type of a joint. Now what we can create are these interesting shapes, top hat, mushroom, and our favorite here is the zigzag shape, where you have an interlocking tongue and groove almost fit between the donor tissue and the host tissue. And this allows a significant more biomechanical stability to these tissues. So for patients who are good candidates, at UC Irvine anyways, this is what we do, is the zigzag corneal transplantation. Here's another pictogram of it. We see here's the patient's cornea that is cut with the zigzag femtosecond settings. The central corneal button is removed, and then a corresponding donor cornea is cut with the same settings. So we have a complementary fit, a lock and key fit here between the donor and the host. This creates a nice angled transition between the donor and host tissue, which improves visual quality. You get a good hermetic wound seal and better biomechanical stability with this kind of wound. This is a study that we did, early study. We have now probably here at the Gavin Herbert Eye Institute have done more of these than anywhere else in the country, and we're getting phenomenal results, and I'll go over some of those with you. But here's a study that looked at the difference between the zigzag incision corneas versus conventional corneal transplantation. And in terms of demographics, both groups were about the same. So we looked at them at month three, post-operative month three. The zigzag group had three diopters of astigmatism. So astigmatism, you don't want so much of it because it's a distortion in the corneal tissue. The conventional group had 4.46. This is significant in terms of getting patients back into glasses and spectacles, for example, in a tolerable amount of astigmatism to be able to tolerate spectacles. So significant difference in astigmatism, especially in the first and third month. This is visual acuity on patients with good visual potential, and this is a logMAR, so the lower here, the better the vision. So the red is the zigzag group, the blue is the conventional group. As early as month one and month three, you can see there was a dramatic improvement in visual results, meaning that the patients in the zigzag group recovered faster. Their visual acuity came in a lot faster, and the significance in month one and three is clear. This is the post-operative appearance of a zigzag corneal transplant. This is the suture we use that we run through. We use one long running suture to close this large wound. And if you look on side view, you can almost see the zigzag there. This is a better picture of it. This is an anterior segment OCT. It's almost like an X-ray of the cornea, if you will. And you can see the shape of the zigzag right here. This is the donor tissue and the host tissue. You can see how perfectly well they fit, lock and key fit, and how well the positioning here is. So again, here in our zigzag group, we had about 80% achieved driving vision early on by month three, and that's 20/40 vision is driving vision versus about 45% in our conventional group. Yes?
With the zigzag, where would you put the stitches?
So there's still a large wound, so let me go back here to that picture. Between the donor and the host, you still have a wound. Now the zigzag fits together, but you want to put stitches to make sure that those tissues stay locked. But the nice thing is with the zigzag, our suture tension is less. So our sutures are less tight because they don't leak as much. They're nice and fitted, and so it results in overall less astigmatism in the long run. And I talk about that here, so there's a greater biomechanical stability of the incisions, more surface area for healing, less suture tension with resulting less astigmatism, and faster visual recovery. Yes?
How are the sutures done?
I'm sorry?
How are the sutures done?
The sutures done are done under a surgical microscope, and we suture those with a hand.
Like needle and thread?
Needle and thread, yes.
How do you get these zigzag
to
fit so perfectly?
Well, we have them cut. The specifics of the laser are inputted into the laser. So we input the same specifics into the donor cut as we do into the host. So the two have the same exact cut, same measurements in terms of depth, so they're a perfect...
The laser does that.
Perfect lock and... Yeah. The laser is very precise at doing that. This is one of the nice advents in this area. So disease, I'm going to move on to one of the other advances here, disease-targeted transplantation. So for patients with diseases of the inner layer or of the front and mid layers of the cornea, the stromal disease, what we call, we have deep anterior lamellar keratoplasty. These are great for patients with keratoconus, anterior stromal scarring, or various types of stromal dystrophies that leave a healthy endothelial layer, but the rest of the cornea is diseased. And conversely, we have endothelial disease. We have what we call the DSEC or DMEC type surgery for patients with, for example, Fuchs dystrophy, which is a dystrophy of poor endothelial quality and count, as well as endothelial disease resulting from things such as complicated cataract surgery. So let's talk about the deep anterior lamellar keratoplasty. As I mentioned here, we're replacing the entire cornea except the decimase membrane. That's that inner lining of the cornea because that's the one that's healthy. We'd like to leave that in place. What are the benefits? The risk of rejection becomes almost zero because when our body rejects the cornea, it usually rejects that inner lining. So if we can maintain the patient's own inner lining, if it's healthy, all the better. It also decreases the risk of surgery because we're really not really opening into the eye, so it becomes an extraocular type of surgery. Now what we're doing, and we're very proud of here at UC Irvine, is we've combined this with the zigzag technology. And this is, you're getting the best of both worlds here because you're getting that zigzag cut and you're getting a disease-targeted type of transplantation. These patients are also, we're seeing more rapid wound healing, less astigmatism, and faster visual recovery. With this type of disease, and this pictorial represents, the red represents that inner lining of the cornea, which is healthy, which we would like to keep, that's the maize membrane. We use our zigzag femtosecond to cut the tissue, and we leave a little spare bridge here, so we don't cut all the way through. And then we do use a needle here to inject a bubble into the deeper layers, a bubble of air, which then separates decimase membrane from the rest of the cornea. And we excise the rest of that stroma. We excise the rest of the cornea, leaving the patient's decimase membrane intact. And then we use a... I'm sorry?
Do you use a scissor?
Well... They're scissors, but they look a little fancier than my pictorial. And then we replace that with a donor cornea, again, same cut with the same zigzag, and we take its endothelial layer off and place that here and suture in the same type of technique. I have a video here. If you're squeamish about looking at eyes, please close your eyes. Well, maybe it won't run, and I'll save you all the trouble. Looks like it might... it might not run here, so maybe I'll try to get this to run later for those of you who are interested. But it's basically a short video displaying that type of surgery. Okay, we'll try it later. So our initial results on the zigzag DALK are fantastic. So far, astigmatisms are very low, below 3 diopters, and we expect to see great results with this type of technique as well. All right, and then we have our disease-targeted corneal transplant for unhealthy endothelial layer. So patients with a poor inner layer, and we'd like to replace that, but keep the rest of the cornea intact. And what we do here, again, here's the cornea. There's that decimase membrane. We peel that first from the back part of the patient's cornea. Some surgeons create venting incisions there. Now, the donor cornea here is usually pre-cut these days in an eye bank, and they cut it using what we call a microkeratome. I won't get into the details of that, but the nice thing is the eye banks now can prepare these tissues, so it decreases the amount of manipulation the surgeon has to do intraoperatively to the tissue. So we receive a nice host tissue. This is the donor tissue we receive, and then we cut it to the size we want, and we slide it in through a very small incision through the edge of the cornea, and it sits here at the back part of the patient's cornea. So we've stripped the patient's cornea of its decimate membrane and replaced it with a back layer here. Now, how do we keep that in place? We can't really suture that. It wouldn't work very well and can cause a lot of distortion, so we use an air bubble. We use an air bubble to float this up, and it, by the process of the cells just kicking in and starting to work, this tissue then sticks after about 24 hours of positioning the patient face up to allow that bubble to work. That posterior donor cornea we've placed then stays adhered to the cornea, and we're done. And this is another video of that, but I have a feeling it's not going to run either. So, again, I'll show these videos later if we have interest. The advantages to this surgery are it's a small incision surgery, so it minimizes the need for a large incision. The astigmatism is less. And one side of the interface is smooth. There's a decreased... problems with interface haze and distortions, which we were seeing with earlier versions of this type of surgery. And it can be done multiple times. So if for some reason that donor cornea doesn't stick first time around, we can replace it easily with another graft through that same incision. The disadvantages are it's surgically challenging, and there is definitely a surgical learning curve for the surgeon to learn how to do these. The patient has to be face up position for 24 hours. Some patients have difficulty with that. Post-operative dislocations can occur, so sometimes we need to replace an air bubble in the patient's eye the next day in clinic, and that can be a little bit challenging and uncomfortable. Yes.
Why does the
patient have to be paced out for 24 hours.
So allow that bubble to work. So we want that bubble to push that new corneal tissue upward. So we use the positioning to get the bubble to work for us. Okay. And this extra tissue we add to the cornea can change the intraocular lens power calculation for patients who have intraocular lenses after cataract surgery. There is a newer surgery here. I just put one slide on this. This is really very new, and we're working on perfecting this technique. But it's the same surgery, but instead of replacing a small portion of cornea into the eye, we're replacing only a very small membrane. So we're getting smaller with our donor tissue here. And it creates a little more surgical challenge because now we have a smaller tissue to manipulate. Last bit of this talk I wanted to talk about today was ocular surface, severe ocular surface disease. And this is for patients who have eyes that look like this. They're essentially blind from surface disease, whether it was from a chemical burn, a thermal burn, and I'll go over the various causes that can cause this, but essentially they've burned off the limbal stem cells of the cornea. And what happens is you have the tissue from the outer parts of the cornea growing onto the surface, causing opacification of the entire cornea, and many times the lids here actually get involved and the lids stick to the eyeball. And these patients really have very little hope for vision without some kind of advance in technology, which we have now, but it is still, I think we have a long way to go still. So these patients either have chemical burns, a disease called Stevens-Johnson, which is almost like it's an autoimmune disease that causes the body to attack the mucous membranes, killing off the stem cells, thermal burns. There's a disease of aniridia, which is a congenital disease. These patients are born with poor limbal stem cells. Some patients who have overuse of contact lens wear for years and years can cause damage to their limbal stem cells. Severe allergic diseases, toxic topical medications for years and years and years can also cause damage to the limbal stem cells. The approach to these patients is a team approach. We have to have a cornea specialist involved, a plastic surgeon, an ocular plastic surgeon involved if the lids become involved in order to separate the lids from the globe. A lot of patients also have concurrent glaucoma, so a glaucoma surgeon on the team is required. And then these patients need to be on immunosuppressive medications, similar to a kidney transplant, because limbal stem cell transplant tissue does tend to reject if the patient is not immunosuppressed. So we use an internist or a transplant immunologist to help us with monitoring these patients while they're on these medications. So it's a staged surgery. We start off with an eye that looks like this, completely opacified. First thing we do is we treat that glaucoma to make sure their pressure in the eye is down. Glaucoma is irreversible, so we want to treat that first. We usually put an early tube shunt to allow release of the pressure in the eye. Then we address the eyelids. We separate the eyelids from the globe if they're attached, or if the lashes are turned inwards, we need to have our oculoplastic colleagues turn those lashes outward for us and get the lids in a good position. The third part involves the immunosuppressing the patient. So the transplant immunologist then puts these patients on strong immunosuppressive medications to lower their immune system. And then we do the limbal stem cell transplant, where we come in and 360 degrees all the way around, we transplant limbal stem cells, either from a cadaver or a living related. Usually these patients are not candidates for getting tissue from the other eye, because usually both eyes are affected. Now, if the other eyes are not affected, the nice thing is we don't need to immunosuppress them because it's their own tissue. But we do the limbal stem cell transplantation, and then 3 or 4 months after that, we finally come in and do a corneal transplant centrally and give them a clear central vision. So this is almost a one-year process these patients go through to regain some sort of functional vision. So this patient had a severe alkali injury. One eye went completely dead, essentially not even responsive to light. The other eye was completely opacified with a little bit of sensation of motion and things like that. So we placed a glaucoma tube shunt, stem cell transplant, and the patient finally, after about a year, vision is almost 20/20, 20/30, which is a couple of lines down from that with the final corneal transplant. So we're seeing some remarkable results in some of these patients with this type of surgery. And finally, patients who are not good candidates for limbal stem cell transplant, we have available an artificial cornea called the Boston keratoprosthesis. This has actually been around for about 40 years and has gone through multiple generations. The earlier generations were not as successful, but I think the latest model here has been doing remarkably well. Indications. So who is a good candidate for an artificial cornea? These are usually patients with previously they've had a corneal transplant and continue to reject their corneas, and they don't do well. So we want to give them something that the body can't reject. This is a plastic piece in the center. It is a. It involves a plastic central optic, and that is placed on a ring of normal corneal tissue, and it has a back plate and a little titanium ring that holds it all together. And then we transplant that onto the cornea. So again, poor candidates for limbal stem cell transplantation. For example, patients are not able to be immunosuppressed for some reason, that they may be good candidates for the artificial cornea. The major complications, especially with the earlier models, were these patients had higher risk of infections of the cornea and the eye. But with the addition of essentially, these patients are on lifetime eye drops, antibiotic eye drops, to prevent infection. But this has decreased the risk of infection significantly. And we keep a bandage contact lens over the cornea to help as well with protection. And retroprosthetic membranes can occur. Usually we treat those with a little laser procedure. Those are not as much of an issue nowadays. But severe visual limitation is usually a result of underlying eye disease. So some of these patients never see 20/20 because they have underlying glaucoma or other disease of the retina that limits their vision. But if they have a good retina, a good optic nerve, there's really no reason why these patients can't see fantastic 20/20 or so. And this is another patient with a severe alkali burn. You can see that lids were completely stuck to the eyeball. We had actually difficulty finding the eyeball, but we found it. We separated the lids. This patient got mucus grafting of the eyelids as well as limbal stem cell transplantation. That is somewhere mid-stage, about 6 months or so into the process. And finally, he got an artificial cornea here. And you can see this eye looks almost normal. And so he's doing very well.
This patient had a good vision?
This patient had glaucoma, so I can't remember what his final vision is, but it was mid-range. He didn't have a 20/20 visual potential because of his glaucoma, but he achieved his visual potential. So conclusions. Innovations in femtosecond laser in cornea transplantation have definitely given corneal surgeons new tools for achieving better and faster visual recovery. We have a lot of fun with this femtosecond laser here at UC Irvine. And we now have technology to specifically address the diseased part of the cornea. So don't get it's now no longer, oh, your corneal transplant. It's, well, what type of corneal transplant are you appropriate for? And, of course, advances in limbal stem cell and artificial corneas have definitely given a lot of hope to patients with severe ocular surface disease that would otherwise have no vision. Thank you.
For those of you that saw the news and maybe read the paper this last week, there yeah. was an announcement of vision mm-hmm. saved by limbal stem cell transplant. You had to read a little bit further to find out that it was using the limbal stem cells of the patient's good eye to transplant to the bad eye and then a corneal transplant after.
That's
and
right.
It was in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Yep, I know that.
And for those...
The stem cell transplant will be better than a cornea that you get from the bank.
This is for ocular surface diseases of the front of the eye. Those patients still need, most of them still need a full cornea at the end, as you saw. But now that the cornea is supported by stem cells that can feed it as the surface cells die, if that makes sense.
We can take a couple
questions?
Minutes of questions for Dr. Fareed.
Good.
Thank you very
much. You already
much.
Know everything. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.